Today's daf in Masechet Erevin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Yotet. Yesterday we were talking about all of the various ma'amorim of Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar, and we had started off with the issues of dualism and the Shema, as Nachi pointed out yesterday, that the Dayo Olam is another duo, and it's Shema is. And just to finish up the ma'amorim of Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar, says Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar today, Yotet Samad Aleph. Bo re'eh, right at the top. Bo re'eh shelo kimidat HaKadosh Baruch Hu midat basar v'dam. Take a look at how different the relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with the way in which the equivalent type of relationship you would think of Malchus and Din and so on is with terms of human relationships. Midat basar v'dam mitchayev adam harigel malchut matilin lo chacha l'toch piv kedei shelo yikalel et ha'melech. So when you have a melech that's b'chayev misa, someone, so, I mean, he can't afford to let this guy have his day in court, you know, and to stand up and say what a bum the melech is and how all of this is lies and his mishpat isn't emes and so on. So what do? They basically stick a piece of wood in his mouth to keep his mouth from saying anything, you know. And because of that, shelo yikalel et ha'melech. Mashenkin, midat HaKadosh Baruch Hu is exactly the opposite. A person is mitchayev harigel makom. Person realizes that midas hadin is being pogad bo. The amazing thing is, here we're talking about Bnei Yisrael, as we're going to see later on. The amazing thing is that the person at that moment is actually happy in recognizing reality instead of the fantasy that he's lived his life on. And because of that, not only does he not have to be kept quiet in artificial means, he himself is shotek because he doesn't have that sense of resentment. On the contrary, it's silence that is the greatest praise. He actually feels a deeper sense and awareness, and he can sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to praise him because it says tehillah. The pasuk ends with ulecha yishulam neder. What does the chodesh shulam neder have to do with anything? Because at that person, at that moment, the person experiences his acceptance of midas hadin to be something that he always swore was going to happen. In other words, it was like he was bringing a korban and he had been makabel on himself a neder that one of these days he's going to actually fulfill the way that he really feels about things. And Heine Dumber, Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, my dechtiv, Ovrei be'emek habacha ma'ayan yeshituhu, gam berachot ya'atem more. Very strange pasuk. It's not clear what it means. So what would be the literal translation? Those who pass through the valley of tears or crying, trees will change it into a well. It's like, what? And the moreh, the early rain, will cover it with bracha. What is that supposed to mean? So we read it like this. Ovrei, the ovrei refers to people who are ovrim, they're ovrei avera. Elu b'nei adam she'ovrim al ritzono shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Emek habacha means emek, they're ma'amikim lahem gehinam. So then instead of simply meaning a valley, it means a ha'amaka. A greater depth, falling into depths of hell, habacha of crying, shebochin umoridin demaot kemaayan shel sitin, that they cry and are tearing like the shitim on the mizbeach that are dripping with the various korbanos. Gam brachot yatem more. So we learn this to mean they are being ma'ate, meaning they cover the more, who was more the din, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with brachot. Shemadzdikim alayhim et adin. V'omrim lefanav, ribono shel olam, yofe danta, yofe zakita, yofe chiyavta. Wonderful, this is beautiful. Yofe tikanta geinom l'rishayim, and gan eden letzadikim, which is basically a raya, the posik is a raya to Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar. That in the end, even the rishayim are over a ritzono shel makom, are mishabeach laKadosh Baruch Hu for his dinim. Ask the Gemara, but is that really true? Doesn't Reb Shimon ben Lakish make an amazing diak which is that Rishaim afilo pitcho shel Geinom einam chozrim b'teshuvah. They could be standing there at the doorway to Geinom, and they still are not going to realize that they did anything wrong. Shenemar v'yatzu v'ra'u b'pigrei ha'anashim ha'poshim bi. So you go out and you see what's left of the remains of those who were sinning against me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that means that they are poshim, meaning they continue to be poshim. It doesn't say pasho. It doesn't say that they sinned in their lives. It says they're currently poshim. And there it talks about Ganem, that tolatam lo tamut, and so on and so forth, which means that it's a permanent state of poshim v'olchim la'olam, and they're no longer able to find any kind of tikkun. So how could you say that Adarabba, that Rishoyim are mekablum es hadinu mishabeach l'Kadosh Baruch Hu? Ah, Lokasha, when we were talking about before, that was going a leap, that was referring to Poshe Yisrael. Poshe Yisrael always deep down recognize the truth and are happy to be relieved of the burden of fantasy. There was a person who would rather live in truth and in the joy of truth, which is a reality and gives a level of life, than to live constantly in this unbelievably difficult world in which you have to constantly fantasize and pretend that something is true when you know that it isn't true. And this takes an immense amount, not only of energy, but of misery. So therefore, if you're talking about Poshe Yisrael, then Enochinami, the original pshat that we said, Rish Lakish is made it to. But what he was talking about, Apush Imbi, is referring to Poshe Ovdei Kochavim. We're over there. Like we say, there's not a fundamental desire to come into the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to accept reality. On the contrary, and this underlying commitment is the difference, really, between Yisrael and the Umas HaOlam. And by the way, I mean, this is not like just to make things work out. It actually has got to be that Reish Lakish holds this, because if you don't say that Reish Lakish is mechalik in this concept here between Bnei Yisrael and between the Umas HaOlam, he ends up with a tremendous contradiction. The Amar Reish Lakish, Poshei Yisrael ein ur Geinom sholetet b'hem. That actually, a Poshea, who is a Ben Yisrael, is really not able to be devoured by Gehenna. It doesn't mean that there's no, in other words, there's no Knesel again. There's a Knesel again. And then he immediately, as we'll see, Avram Avinu frees them from Ganem, and so on and so forth. But the fire of Ganem has no real power over them, because we see this from a Kal V'chomer, from the Mizbeach HaZahav. Look, the Mizbeach HaZahav had basically the thickness of one dinner Zahav of gold on it. Remember that it fundamentally is wood, and we cover it over with this little thin layer of gold. Okay, look at how many centuries it was used for burning ketores and so on, and never was it affected by the flames on the mizbeach. And amat kama shanim lo sholto bo'ur. So I mean, imagine Poshe Yisrael. I mean, these Poshe Yisrael—they're horrible people. Yeah, okay, but lamaisa the meleim mitzvot kerimon. Obviously, we're not talking about those who are mevazim and the apikuri, all of those that the Gemara discusses, but these people we're talking about, that they're a poshea, meaning that they do all kinds of averas and the matchbing shemer mitzvahs and so on, but they're not apikursim, and they're not denying HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. So you're like a slice of pomegranate. The reikim shebachim is how we dash the number of bishemim melakshar tikri rakatech. Doesn't mean your forehead, your temple. It means reikatech. Those who are most empty of you are still afilo reikanim shebach, are still meleim mitzvot kirimon. They are like rimoni. So then alachat kama vekama, you think they're going to be affected by a little bit of fire over here, a little bit of hell. What's that going to affect them? Doesn't matter to them any more than the Mizbeach HaZahav was affected by the fire on the Ovidina of gold. So then if that's the case, then Reish Lakish contradicts himself. I mean, in one place he's saying they sit in hell and they don't do tshuva, and they're completely devoured by Gehenna. And that's what the pasuk is referring to. Isham lo tichpe, and the fire is never going to go out. Tola tam lo tamut. So, I mean, if that's referring to the same people that Reish Lakish is referring to here, he's got a big problem. So it must be that ain't a chinami. There's two completely different visions. The poshim that it was referring to over there is talking about poshe the umay sa'elam, and what Reish Lakish is referring to is the poshe Yisrael. Okay, so then what about the pshat that we had by Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, by the Ovrei be'emek kabacha? So then elohadichiv Ovrei be'emek kabacha. We had a whole. Their ma'amikim lahem gehenam, and that was referring to Poshe Yisrael, right? Clearly, because I mean, over there it talks about brachot yatel to the Rosh Hamoreh, so they were the ones who were being mishabeach laKadosh Baruch Hu. That you said was referring to Yisrael, and nonetheless, it says ma'amikim lahem gehenam, and that's what we learned over there. So how does Reish Lakish square that pasuk with his Kal v'chomer of the Ovidinazot? No, that doesn't mean that Ganim is sholeit on them when it says Mamikim Lahem Ganim. It means that the din is paskin for them, and then they're brought like, okay, guys, you're going down straight down to hell. Ahudim Achayva, he shaita beganim. But Avram Avinu doesn't let that happen to a Ben Bris. So comes along Avram Avinu and says, what? My child in Gehenna, like hell. And he takes him straight out of Gehenna. So because of that, he's Masiklu, brings them out of Gehenna, and he's Mekabalu. So he brings them into the fold. A little bit of a problem over here, Mataki, the truth, everything's fine. And except for one case, and that's a Ben Yisrael who sleeps with a Bat Oved Kochavim, where over there, he does not recognize that this guy is Jewish. Why? Because he has basically been Moshech Arlato. He reestablishes his foreskin because the whole concept of the bris had to do with the identity of Yisrael and the way that it was committed to the ongoing period of Arivia of Yisrael. So at that point, his equipment turns into Goyesher equipment. Velo Mevashkelai, he doesn't recognize him. This guy's not a Jew, so he's not going to take him out of Gehenim either. Anyway, so Reish Lakish says that since Yeshayahu says that the Isham lo tichbe, if they're a poshim bi, mashma that this is a permanent situation, the question is, does he have a right to learn out from the word poshim that it necessarily defines an ongoing situation? Because that's not necessarily true grammatically. The Pashe v'Azlin. So if you're going to say Hamotzi etchem mi'eretz Mitzrayim, or Hashem Amale etchem mi'eretz Mitzrayim, I mean, what does that mean? That he's currently being Motzi etchem? He's currently being Mal etchem? The Masik u'Mafik? You think that's what it means? I mean, it means that he took us out, and that state was a state that was achieved at the time. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily an ongoing commitment that somebody has. So the same thing may be true over here. Maybe Pashehu, they were Poshim, but doesn't mean that it continues to be Poshim. Not a terribly impressive kind of question on Reish Lakish. The Gemara doesn't bother answering Rav Kahana. Anyway, another thing that Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Elazar said was that Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Elazar, I mean, once we're on the topic of Gehenna, you might want to know how to get there, just in case you want any type of a tour to make sure that it doesn't end up being permanent. You might want to get a look. So there's three entrances to Gehenna, which this is very important for Barnea over here, because I myself have been actually approached by tourists, admittedly Hasidic tourists, who asked me, because I lived in the area, if I could direct them to the Pitcha Shel Gehenem that was nearby. Maybe I could actually bring them there and show them. And I told them that there's a website, which is Reb Barnea's website, and he'd be happy to take them. So let's make sure that we get all these Pitcha Shel Gehenems right. So there's three of them. One is in the Midbar, one is in the Yam, and one is in Yerushalayim. So in the Midbar, we know, because, I mean, it says the whole story of Korach, so they went straight down to hell. So apparently, there was an opening there. There's one in the Yam, because Yonah says, "Mibeten Sheol Shivati and Shamata Koli." There I was in the actual belly of hell, and you heard my voice. How did he get to the belly of hell? He was there in the Yam. And Birushalayim, Dechtiv De'um Hashem Asher Urlo B'Tzion V'Tanurlo Birushalayim. So Hashem, who has this fire in Tzion, and he's got this furnace in Yerushalayim. What's the fire and what's the furnace? Tani Devei Rabbi Yishmael. Asher Urlo B'Tzion, this refers to Gehenim itself. The Tanur is the opening to Gehenim. Zuzu Pitcha Shel Gehenim. So apparently in Yerushalayim, there is a Petach Shel Gehenim. Ask the Gemara V'Tuleka, there's no more. V'Omer Rabbi Merion, Omer Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi, V'Amer Leitana Rabbi Bar Merion, Nebidevei Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, remember, had his own set of Braitot. Remember that all of the Gedolei of the various collections of Talmidei Chachamim, Sheyoshvim HaSufot VaSufot VaOskim BaTorah. So there was that period in which there was this organization of all kinds of materials that much of it was prior to the Mishnah, and Rabbeinu HaKadosh organized it into the Mishnah. He never wrote it, he organized it. And that was the first step we spoke about before of turning the Torah Shebaal Peh into a limited collection. But also there are those, the brights that are Mefarish, the Mishnah. So over here, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had organized also his own set of brises, as Rashi explains. And one of those brises says that Shtei Tmorot Yesh B'Gei Ben Hinnom, that there's two very special palm trees in Gei Ben Hinnom, which is right outside of the old city. And there's this smoke that is coming out from between them. And when the Mishnah in Sukkot talks about, what you can use as a lulav. So the Mishnah in Sukkot says that Sinei Har Barzel are ksheros, that even though they are not in very good condition because of all of the hell that's around them, that nonetheless, those lulavim are kosher lulavim. And that Sinei Har Barzel, that smoke that's coming up from there, that is the Pitcha Shel Gehenim. So apparently there's another one, right? Well, I mean, maybe not. Maybe that is considered to be Yerushalayim. Now, of course, this has to do with Barnea's general question. Did Yerushalayim extend in the direction of Gei Ben Hinnom, or was it actually down towards Yer Tzion? And could it be that David HaMelech actually is buried up there on Har Tzion, and so on and so forth? I'm sure we'll see this in a forthcoming novel, a book, at any moment. Sorry about that. Okay. Anyway, so now we talked about Sheol, right? There's other words for Gehenim. I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. The truth is there's seven different Shemot for Gehenim because, as the Marsha explains, there's seven different Dargas that we have, the same seven names we have for the Yetzer Hara. So that means that seven different elements of the way a person becomes connected to Ra are reflected in these seven Dargas of Gehenim. So therefore, each one of these Dargas has got a different name. The Elohim, we have Sheol. And remember that these are different layers and not just different names. And Gehenim has layers in it. Same, we have Shiva Shamayim. So we have Shiva Gehenim, Sheol, Avadon, which is like to completely destroy something. Be'er Shachas, the deep well of destruction. Bor Sha'on, we have the pit of, I don't know what you would call Sha'on, like a whirlpool. Tita Yavin, a quicksand, mire of quicksand. Tzal Mavet, which is Tzal, the shadow of Mavet. Eretz Tachtit. Eretz Tachtit is the underworld. So, Sheol we find, it says, Mibetan Sheol Shevati, Kshamata Koli, that we had in Yonah that we just spoke about. Avadon, Dichtiv, Hayesupar Bakever Chastecha, Emunatecha Ba'Avadon. So we see that David HaMelech refers to hell as Avadon. Be'er Shachat, Dichtiv, Kilota Azov Nafshi Lishol, Lotitel Chasidecha, Lirot Shachat. Bo'or Sha'on v'tita yavin, tichti v'ya'aleni mi'bor Sha'on mi'tita yavin. Tzalmavet, tichti v'yosh v'choshech v'tzalmavet. This is actually not such a good posik of the yosh v'choshech v'tzalmavet, because that's referring to
the thing that we learn out from there, Tosis points out, Arba Tzrichim L'Hodot, it's talking about people who feel they're living in hell because they're caught in a tornado or whatever, and they're a hurricane in the Yam. I mean, so they're alive. How can that be referring to hell? So therefore, Tosfos suggests that actually the correct pasuk to bring here would be the pasuk from Iov, not the pasuk from Tehillim, in which Iov talks about El Eretz Choshech Vitzalmavet, which over there is a reference to hell, as opposed to just the feeling that you're living in hell, but it isn't really seen there as a shame of hell itself. So, okay, that probably is the correct gears. Ask the Gemara, but there's other names, isn't there? I mean, what about the name Gehenna? I mean, isn't that a name for Gehenna? Says the Gemara, no, that's a description. It's not a name. It means it's called Gehinom because it's the Geh that is Amuka, so it is deep. It goes down like Hinom, like the Geh of Hinom that we were talking about. And it's called that. Why? But I mean, you could call it the Grand Canyon and have people go for tours anyway. No, because its Hinam is actually exchangeable with Chinam. And Hakol Yoredla al Iske Chinam, it should say, says Reb Kiveger, it brings from Mashal de Kersos, Hakol Yoredla al Iske Chinam. Everything that is being done over the Rashi learns that Chinam means particularly sexual things because it refers to Zacharnu Tadagash or Achanu B'Mitzrayim Chinam. And over there we say that means Tadagash is a reference to fooling around, that Chinam it's Chinam in a mitzvahs. But obviously the overall Nakuda of Chinam, Golos being referred to as Lukacha mi Chinam and the Bechia shel Chinam and the Sinat Chinam, all of these Avat Chinam, all of these issues of Chinam share the same issue of living in a world of fantasy. So everybody relates sexual issues to fantasy when they talk about stam fantasy. That's what they mean. But obviously the deeper sense of fantasy is far beyond just elements that are erotic. Fantasy is fantasy, that all of life becomes fantasy. And because of that, everybody ends up in hell because of fantasy. So it doesn't matter where that fantasy expresses itself totally, but that aspect of chinam is like nothing matters. That's the real meaning of chinam. And amitz is not linked to any reality, which takes us all the way back to the beginning, which is that the thing that people like about going to hell and they're made to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the fact that they no longer are living in fantasy. So it's at least I feel that I'm alive, whereas everything else is like, I don't know, what am I doing here? Ask the Gemara, what about Tofta? I mean, that's also Tofta is a pasuk, isn't it? I mean, doesn't it say, Ki aruch mi et mol Tofta? We always darsh that pasuk also in Yeshayahu, that it means that from way in the beginning, hell has been there prepared from the beginning. That's the whole context of the pasuk over there. I mean, it talks about even Gamhula Melech Hachin, it's ready for kings to be thrown into, and it talks about Medurata Eish and Eitzim Harbei. I mean, it's obviously talking about someplace that is some type of serious tanur, so why don't we call that Tofteh? No, Tofteh is also a description. Tofteh is the same idea as Chinam. Tofteh means seduction. So it's kol hamitpate b'yitzro. You only go to hell when you've been seduced by your yetzahara into fantasy. That's the point. That's the same idea as chinam. Now that we've talked about Gehenim, you might want to take a tour of some other place. That one is called Gan Eden. Now, that would also be good. And there's a different ptachim to Gan Eden. So where do you get into Gan Eden? Well, the in Eretz Yisrael, so if the way in is through Eretz Yisrael, you got to go through Beit Shan for sure. Because, I mean, look at the fruits over there. Oh, my gosh. I mean, Emek Beit Shan, amazing. So, I mean, where would all of those beautiful trees from Gan Eden be reflected in the world? Close to the doorway, right? So if you get all these amazing peirot of Emek Beit Shan, so that's got to be where you get in. Now, if you're going to go through somewhere in Arabia, so then probably Beit Gorem is the entrance because they're the best Paris that you get over there. Again, Reb Barnea is preparing, I believe, a tour through all of these places. V'im Beina Naharotu, if it's somewhere in Mesopotamia, then probably Dumaskinin. I mean, that's an amazing area. Abaye used to say about Bavel, that the nicest place in the Paris in Bavel was on the southern side of the Nahar Prat. And Rava would say that it's the Paris of Harpania. He felt that they were the best. Do you want to show us the map, Rabbi Barnea, of where to go, or you'll leave it for the website and the advertisement? Okay. So anyway, getting back to the Mishnah. So now we're talking about the entranceway into the special relationship that we have of these Dyumdin, which was made in order for us to be able to access water while on the road on Shabbat. And we've got to sit over there on our way to Yerushalayim, and we're coming back up from Bavel. And it says over there in the Mishnah that there's a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and between Rabbi Yehuda. So the Mishnah gives us this idea that we have a special type of mechitza, which is made out of diyumdim. And these diyumdim are gamma-shaped poles or L-shaped boards that have an amma in each direction. You put one diyumen on each quarter, and that creates a rishus hayochid diyoraisa because of the fact that we see the amma and amma on each side, everywhere that you look, as actually being a mechitza, which normally we wouldn't have accepted. And the reason that we wouldn't have accepted it is because of the porutz meruba al ha'omid. We have almost all of the area is open, so that even though it's open in a way that is within range, Aliba de Rabbi Meir, it's within range of the normal mechitza that would have an opening of 10. Because according to Rabbi Meir, we're stuck with 10 over here also. He says we got to use 3 parot, right? So these pasin beiraot, because of the omid meruba, are only mutter for the beiraot. Remember yesterday we had a 3-way machloket, whether it's beiraot, is it borot, is it only yachid, is it rabim? Where exactly did we have this heter? Fine, that was a different issue that we discussed yesterday. And because of this, we have a limitation, we said, at how much distance you can have between the two diyumdim. So it said in the Mishnah that b'neihem kimlo shtei, we had shtei rivkot. Everybody agrees it's 2 rivkot. A rivka is a team of shvarim, of oxen. And the Rabbi Meir says each team has 3, and Rabbi Yehuda says each team had 4, and that equaled 10 amot, as we're about to see, for Rabbi Meir, and 13 and a third amot, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is the maximum distance that we can have of the petach between the two diyumdim. Now, it then says that these oxen are to be measured tied together. Kishurot, and then it says velo mutarot. I mean, I should hope so. If something is kashur, then it isn't not kashur. I mean, is it really necessary to say both of them? So given the tonile kishurot, it's quite obvious that it's velo mutarot. No, it isn't, you see, because there may be 2 different types of meaning to the word kishurot. Ma'o de tema kishurot doesn't mean literally they're tied together. What it means is that they're tightly together. So it means ke'ein kishurot, which allows you a little bit more room. It's not that we actually have them roped together in this yoke and so on. Avo mamash lo, kamash lo, no. We are talking about the absolute closest that you could team up these oxen, and that's Nogea the Shear. And so because of that, you got to know, and I do not mean that they're loose in any way. They are close and tied close. Then continues the Mishnah, one going in and one going out. Now, if that's the case, then obviously it can't mean one para is going in and one para is coming out. I mean, that's crazy. Because you said that they're tied together. So then that means that we don't want that extra space that is necessary for when you're passing by the other one. So therefore, what that means is not that it's a reference to the individual para. It's referring to a rifka nichneset verifka yotzet, which means that even though the shiur of the parim per se is very, very tight, the actual space includes the ability of the trucks to be pulling in and out simultaneously. And therefore, it means that it's slightly more than you would have assumed before. Now, we said also that if you want to bring it closer, you can bring it closer, but it has to be enough that you can have rosho verubo of the pora inside. Why? Because if not, we're worried that the pora will back up and you'll be bringing the water out of the rosho sayochid, which was the well, and now you're going to continue walking with it to try to get it to the pora so the pora can drink, not realizing you've already gone out of the area between the Shnei Diyumdin, and now you carry it into Rosh Hasharabim. So therefore, you've got to have enough for sure that Rosh Hasharuba will fit in it. Now, we don't quite know what's the shear of that, so let's get all of these shearim straight first. Tanurabbanan, when we're talking about a Rosh Hasharuba, how much does that mean that you've got to have within the Diyumdin? It's 2 amot. Okay, well, once tell me this, how thick is each one of these parot that I can figure out how much 8 of them are according to Rabbi Yehuda, or how much 6 of them are according to Rabbi Meir? Oh, each one, again, these are measurements. Obviously, these are meant as the standard measurements, like we use all of the other bodily measurements. So this is 1 2/3 of an amma per para, which if you multiply them times 6, comes to approximately k'eser, which is a little bit ridiculous because anybody who does the arithmetic see that it is not exactly, not approximately equal to namas. It exactly equals 10 amas. What do you mean? So if you're talking about 6 times 1 2/3, that equals 10. The Gemara is going to ask, what do you mean approximately? Anyway, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says that, well, that would mean, if according to me, you need 2 times 4, because 2 rifkos of 4. So then you would need approximately kishlosh esrei amah or karbas esrei amah, approximately 13, 14. Okay, what does 13, 14 mean? We'll ask that too in a moment. Now, ask the Gemara, what do you mean when Rabbi Meir says approximately 10? Is that approximately 10? It is 10. Ha'eser havyan. Yeah, but since the next, very next piece that's coming to tell me Rabbi Yehuda, he has to talk about approximately, because he wants to talk about whole numbers. And we're going to see this whole discussion is in terms of whole numbers. He's talking about whole numbers. He says, well, it's about 13, 14. So 13, 14 is because I can't say it's 13, because it's 13 and a third, and I can't say it's 14. And I don't want to get into fractions. So therefore, I tell you, listen, you do the math, guys. But it's about 13 or 14. So because of that, we're talking about approximations when we're dealing with Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi, we use the lotion of ke. So ask about, well, what did he mean 13? It isn't approximately 13. It's got to be more than 13. It's 13 and a third. Obviously, but I mean, since you want to say it's approximately 14, you say it's approximately 13. That's what that means. Somewhere in between. But what do you mean? But it isn't approximately 14. It's way less than 14. I mean, it's 1/3. It's not 2/3. Why are you saying approximately? So, Omer of Papa, that's what this is. This is like just a way of expressing a area that's between 13 and 14. That just means to say it's more than 13, but it's less than 14, and he's letting you do the math. Okay. So now, Omer of Papa, let's figure out how that adds up in practical terms. When we need to deal with the Pasei Beraot, imagining how large the Be'er in the middle of the Pasei Beraot is. So that's going to be very, very different. What this would mean is like this. If you have a water hole, again, whether he means literally cistern or whether he means Be'er, it's no gay that other machlok. So let's just talk about the whatever that water hole is, right? If it's 8 amot, now we come to understand the Mishnah a little better. Because look, the Mishnah says that according to Rabbi Meir, you need extra pasim, right? Why does he say that? He says it's not enough to have diyumdim. You need the 4 diyumdim, plus you need 4 pasim between the diyumdim. And Rabbi Yehuda says you don't. Then on the other hand, Rabbi Meir says, okay, and how big is the opening? The opening is big enough for 2 rifkot of each one of them being 3, which equals 10. So where exactly do I put these pasim? I don't understand what he's saying. And would it never be nogea Rabbi Yehuda to have pasim? I mean, what if we go beyond 13 and a third? Therefore, explains Rabbi Meir that the two parts of the Mishnah are interrelated. And what the Mishnah is saying is like this. Suppose you start off with a bar that is 8, okay? Now, that means you have to have enough. You can't get so close that you don't have enough on all sides of this 8 for Rosh Hasharuba Shalpara. Okay, how much was Rosh Hasharuba Shalpara? We just said 2 amot. That means you need 2 amot on either side. That gives you a total of at least 12, right? So you've got now your area that's going to be included with your gamma boards is going to be 12 by 12. But each one of those gamma boards takes off, by having two of them, one on each side, takes off two of those 12, which means that we have a petach of 10 on all sides. If that's what you've got, and you started with eight in the bar in the middle, of course Rabbi Meir doesn't say you put an extra pasim. Where would you put an extra pasim if Rabbi Meir himself says that you're allowed to go up to an opening of 10? It would be ridiculous to say you need other pasim. Then you don't have an opening of 10. So everybody's moda in that case. You don't need those extra four pshutim that Rabbi Meir is claiming you need. On the other hand, once you get to a bar that is 12, then even according to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't have enough. Because if you have 12 and you need to extend the 12 with the two amot, which is enough for a porah, Rosh HaVeruba v'porah on all sides, you now have an enclosure which is 16 by 16. So when you take off your diyumdin and you take off one amma on one side and one amma on the other side, you're still going to have an opening between the diyumdin of 14. And Rabbi Yehuda agrees you can't have an opening of 14. You can only have an opening of 13 and a third. So in that case, even Rabbi Yehuda would be moda. If you want to expand, you've got to expand by adding these pshutim. So you need to have these pasim in the middle, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. So that means that there's no real fundamental new machlokas so far between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. It's all one machlokas. How much empty space can you have between the two diyumtim? So therefore, I would say everybody agrees that in that case, kulei amalo plige, that yes, we do need to add additional pshutim. Okay. So where is the machlokas? The machlokas, again, if we leave it only at whole numbers, so then the machlokas would be in that area, between 8 and 12. So that would mean between 8 and 12, according to Rabbi Meir, if we've gone beyond 8, we already need pshutim, because we've got more than 10 between the diyumdim. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't necessarily. Because, I mean, in other words, we're talking about over there between. We mean you get all the way up to 13. Okay, so then fine. And you, as long as it's no more than 13 and a third, it's fine. So I understand. I mean, is Rav Papa telling us anything new? I mean, didn't we learn in the Mishnah Beferish? I mean, anybody understands this. If Rabbi Meir says you can get up to 10 amos, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying you can get up to 13 and a third amos, so then it's quite clear that according to Rabbi Meir, you don't have to limit the opening of 10 amos. And it's quite clear that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you do have to limit the opening when it goes beyond 13 and a third amos. And that would mean, I mean, any kindergarten child would understand. So what are they arguing about? They must be arguing in the distance between those two shiurim. Translated into how big the bor is in the middle, it means between the 8 and the 13. I mean, so I don't know what he's adding there. No, you're right. The truth is, Rav Papa never heard the Braita. Rav Papa's commenting on the Mishnah. You're right that we know what all of this is about, but only after we learned that Mishnah that gave us all of the measurements. The two amot for being Rosh HaVeruba Vapora, and the one and a third amma for being the thickness of the para, right? And that whole, that he didn't know. So he was omed on the shiurim on his own by inserting into the Mishnah the reference to how big is the bor. He basically is teaching us all of this, because now we understand from Rav Papa's math what's going on. So Rav Papa himself, lo shmiole, and therefore he was coming to tell us basically what the Braita told us, except he was plugging in those values directly into the Mishnah, and the Braita just gave it as, okay, theoretically speaking, what is Rosh HaVeruba Shopara, and what is the Ovi Shopara? Now, we have over here six Abayas that are asked by Abaya, and they're asked, each one of them is asked about this sugya from Abaya to Rabba. So now, the question is, what exactly is done to remember this? So if you want to remember, you can use this siman, which is Orech Yoter Betel, Chitzat Chotzer is Yovsha. And that would be your siman. So each one of these words is one of these Abayas. So let's take the Orech, first of all. So Abaya asked Rabba, what would be the din where you've got your diyumdim and they are too far apart? So ha'arich b'diyumdim. So suppose you made them longer, the area between the two diyumdim, and you extended it whatever the shear is of pshutim, whatever that would be. So in other words, what you did was, you didn't just extend the area between the diumdim. You extended the diumdim themselves. So that now you've got, let's say, diumdim of two amot. And you still stuck with your 10 amot in the middle. Except you did this not by adding a parshat in the middle. You did it by extending the diumdim on either side. Is that just as good? I mean, is Rabbi Meir saying that specifically? The concept of diumdim only works with this idea of a diumid of an amah. If you want to go beyond that, you have to have something that shows you that this is more like a mechitza, which means that you interrupt the empty space with something. Or is he just saying that, no, all I'm interested in is that we don't have a petach of eser. Now, of course, this has deep implications for what it was that Rav Papa was saying in the end, right? I mean, Rav Papa was talking about what you got to do, and do you have to have an additional pas, according to Rabbi Yehuda? That's no longer so clear once Abai has raised this issue, and indeed, Abai is going to raise the question on Libet Rabbi Yehuda as well. Was Rav Papa correct in saying you have to add a pas, meaning in the middle, to make it look like it's more separated? Or was he saying that when he talked about you have to add an extra portion, he meant you have to add an extra portion on the side of each diumid to make the diumid longer? Okay, that's also going to be an issue. So is this valid or not? According to Rabbi Meir, is the point that I just don't go beyond Esser? Is that the point? Omar Leh said, Rabbah, well, I mean, read the Mishnah. It says in the Mishnah, you can make it as big as you want as long as you add bipasin, as long as you add to the boards. I mean, so doesn't that mean you can extend the boards that are there? Demarech bidiyumdim? In other words, you're adding to what's there. It doesn't say you're adding pasim. It says you're adding bipasim. So those pasim are the apparent pasim of each side of the diumad. So it's basically saying that, of course, I mean, that's even lechatchila. That's what you should be doing. No, I mean, what does it mean? Miyarbe bipasim doesn't mean in the pasim. It means make pshutim. No? De mafish vavid bipshutim. Well, so then if that's the case, it shouldn't say bibal shiyarbe bipasim. It should say biyad shiyarbe pasim. You should, as long as you make it more. What do you mean as long as you make it more? You should say, you have to put in pasim, no? Well, okay, that could be what that means. I mean, tnei achi arba pasim, we sometimes use that word bipasim, meaning in the issue of the pasim. So I don't know. We don't have a raya anymore. There was another way that this was said, which also leaves us confused. The question of what we assumed first. And the ikedi amri was that what Rabbah actually said to him was, it says in the Mishnah, ubevachi arbe bepasim, doesn't mean that you need extra boards. I mean, my lav the mafish vavit pshutim, right? I mean, that means you can't just extend your diumid. No, maybe it means you can extend the diumid. As a matter of fact, look at the words. It says, ubevachi arbe bepasim. Shma mina that bepasim means you take a board that's already there and you make it longer. So you're being marich on that pas. Okay. So again, we don't have a raya from this. The next question was, how about if the opening, according to Rabbi Yehuda, would be too big? And it's Yotem Yishlosh Le'ama V'shlish. And Rabbi Papa said that means he would agree that you've got to do something, which is obvious. Okay, but what do you do? Do you make these pshutim in the middle, the way we understood Rabbi Meir? Or does Rabbi Yehuda hold bedafka, you make the diumdim longer? Because he never spoke about having these separate pieces. And remember, separate pieces is not a very good eitzah. Why? Because it involves us in a contradiction to our generally accepted idea of avira dahaigisa vahaigirsa umavatale, right? And that's exactly what we have over here. We have an avira dahaigisa vahaigisa. Whenever you have a single board, you have to look at the area that it's surrounded by. And over here, it is surrounded by an avir that would be mavatale. So then if you're telling me I could put up a pass, so what you're basically telling me is that the tikkun of the diumdim included two very important kulas. One of the kulas was that you can rely on this brain-filling, what is to us is more of an optical illusion, which the Arisa is considered to be a mechitza because of the fact that it has an ama on all sides. And plus, we're going to add another takana. The other takana is we're going to be ignoring the question of avira daigisa v'daigisa. Now, I understand that we've already ignored the problem of Omed of Poritz Merubala Omed. By definition, I mean, we've got almost nothing over here. It's all Poritz, right? But does that mean, and this goes back to how we examined the issue earlier of Poritz Merubala Omed, when we involved Ota Avir Da Haigisa Ba Haigisa, is that a subset of a local application of Poritz Merubala Omed, or is that a different issue? And that goes into the question over here. So what is better? Do we assume that all of this, the additional pas, is included in the original takona of Diyumdin because of Poritz Merubala Omed doesn't matter to us, and therefore use pasiv, and it looks more closed off? Or is this a specific takana that was made for Diyumad, in which case it doesn't help to throw a piece in the middle, according to Rabbi Yehuda? What you've got to do is to be ma'arich the Diyumad. What good is a piece in the middle that's going to be mevutal to the avir on all sides? So what would be the din? Is it better to make pshutin, or is it better to be ma'arich the Diyumdin? And Rabbi told him, this is actually a braita. Kama hein mekoravim. How close can you put these diyumdim? You could put them close enough that kidei rosh avaruba shalpora, like we said. We have to make sure that there's not more than two amos, because otherwise you may carry out. Okay, but how far away can they be? Well, the Tanakhama says, what's the difference? It could be a kur, it could be a kurayim, it could be hundreds of times more than the normal shear of the Beit Saw. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's limited by the normal din of mechitzot that are guruot, that are ru'ot. This is not normal mechitza. And they were only matir beit sa'atayim. But if it's yoter mi beit sa'atayim, it would be asur. So they said to Rabbi Yehuda, what are you talking about? And a place that is mukaf ladira, a deer, a sahar, a mukta, a chotzer. I mean, you don't agree that over there it makes no difference how big it is? Afilu beit chameshet kurim, afilu beit asara kurim, which is 100 times more, 150 times more than a Beit Sa'atayim. Isn't it mutter over there? So he said, of course it's mutter over there. But what is the connection to here? Here, we're talking about pasin, pase beiraot, and there you're talking about a mechitza, a real mechitza. There's no limit to which people are living there. But over here, it's not a real mechitza. And therefore, this is just pasin, and therefore you're limited to the Beit Sa'atayim. Now, says Rabbah, think about this, he says to Abaya, and you'll understand the answer to your question. Because if the case would be that the only way to make this work is by making the diyumdim longer so that you have basically 13 and a third between them in the petach. So then let's figure out how much it would have to be. A Beit Sa'ah is close to 71 amas by 71 amas, okay? So if you're going to be marich the diyumdim, gentlemen, you'd have to be marich the diyumdim to more than almost 29 amas, right? That would be each one of them, would be 29 amos long. I mean, that's a mechitza. That's not diyumdim anymore. That's not a paritz merubala imed. That's an imed much more than a paritz. So I understand if he is saying, no, it's good enough to be a Beit Sa'ah. So why does he say to them, well, these are only pasim? What do you mean these are only pasim? It's a giant wall over here. It's 30 feet long. What are you talking about, pasim? So obviously, it's clear, says Rabbah, that it must be that we're not talking about what you're suggesting, that we need these long diyumdim. It means just put in boards, which normally we would say, so that must mean that Rabbi Yehuda is, along with Rabbi Meir, he's letting you put in these little boards. And that's why he's saying it's not real mechitza, it's just these little boards. Says the Gemara, not necessarily. It could be that Abaya would still be right in suggesting that maybe the only thing you could do with a little bit of Rabbi Yehuda would be to extend the diyumdin, not to stick a board in the middle. And so why does he say this is not a mechitza? He should have said, well, they're both mechitzas. They're not, but obviously he doesn't say that. No, because remember that what Abaya, the way Abaya understood it is that we're talking about allowing you to have your petach of 13 and a third. If you have a real mechitza, can you have a petach of 13 and a third? Absolutely not. The maximum petach, if you weren't talking about the special case of pase beiraot, would be 10. Okay, so what Rabbi Yehuda was saying is, excuse me, gentlemen, when you're talking about the deer, the sahar, the muktzah, the chotzer, That was a normal mechitza which only allowed a pirtza of eser. Now you're coming and talking about an area where you're going to be bringing in these rivkot, right? One coming in, one coming out, which means that you need 13 and a third. And you're asking me, so what's wrong? Aren't you meida? It could be up to a Beit Kur, Beit Kurai. I don't understand. No, I am not. And neither are you, for God's sake. Because the din of Pasei Beirot is a completely different halacha. It doesn't follow the din of Mechitza that allow you to only have an opening of 10, because you can't get into two rivkot into 10. So the whole point over here is that we need, anyway, we're going to need this special heter. And because of that, I'm telling you, those are real mechitzot by your chotzer and your deer and sahar. And over here, you don't have the little torat pasin aleim. Over there, you've got a torat mechitzot. They fall into the set of mechitzas because the piritza is 10. Over here, they fall into the set of pasim and the piritza is shloshes reva shlish. That may be the only thing Rabbi Yehuda meant to say. The third of the six questions is boy me abaye mi rab. Another thing, tail. The next thing was tail. What's the question of the tail? So remember, we have a fascinating halacha that as long as you have a slope that reaches in the area of 4 amot of length, it reaches 10 tfachim in height. That is considered to be a mechitza. And that's how we use seawalls and so on as mechitzas, continental shelves as mechitzas. So the question over here is, can I also use them as diyumdim? Because, I mean, they're not shaped like the yundim. I mean, so would a telamit laketa saramit toch arba, would that be also allowable as a diyumad? Nidon mishum diyumad? O eno nidon mishum diyumad? So Rabba said to him, I got a braita for that one too. Because Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says that if you've got a square, you've got this big square rock, it's an Eben Merubat, which is big enough that if you would theoretically actually shave it down, right, and cut out the middle portion, you would have an ama on one side and an ama on the other side. So then that's good enough. You would still have an ama on either side. You can use it. Where's the ama? You don't need to actually have it there. It just needs to be within that rock. That's what Michelangelo always did, right? I mean, he just needed to take away the rock that would make the sculpture. So the same thing would be true over here. So any fool would see this as a diyumat. So roin koshi tekalir vish ba'amal gamakan nidon bishum diyumat. But if not, eno nidon bishum diyumat. Now Rabbi Shmo benosh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer, haita sham even agulas, because you have a cylinder. If you have a cylinder, it's exactly the same. If you would be able to cut down the cylinder into a square, and then you would be able to cut it into two, and you would have an amalekan of an amalekan. You can do that too. That's nidon mishum diyumat. And if not, it's not nidon mishum diyumat. So in other words, Rabbi Shmuel holds you can even use a cylinder. Rabbi Shimon Elazar holds it has to be square. What's the machlokas between them? The machlokas is how much rowing can you tolerate? In other words, how many steps of rowing do you do? If you're talking about a cylinder, first you have to square the cylinder. Then you have to cut it into two, all obviously, mentally. And then you have to be rowing it as if it's two pieces, one going in arm in one direction, one going in the other direction. So, okay, Rabbi Shimon Elazar holds, you don't say trey rowing. You don't do two steps in that. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel holds, Mar Sarva filu trey rowing nami amrin. And therefore you cut it around until in your mind, so you got a square. And then you cut the square into two. The fourth question is, so here was the fourth question. Fourth question is, can you use chitzat hakanim, a partition that's made out of these konim, which are kona, kona, pachot, mishlosha. So each reed is less than 3 tvachim. So we have one rowing, so to speak, if you want to call it a rowing, which is lovud. So it's a virtual mechitza, right? Can you use that as a diyumat also? Or is that like, I mean, you go overdoing it over here. If you have a real piece, okay. But if even the ama in each direction is really just made out of 3 poles, is that good enough? Omar Lay, yep, you can learn this in the Braita. The Braita says that if you have a tree, or you have a fence, or you have, a chitzat hakanim, and you have these, each side of your pasei beraot are made out of like some other thing. One side of the pasei beraot is a tree, and one side is a fence, and one side is a chitza sakani. It's fine. It's good enough to yumad. I'm assuming that a chitza sakani means exactly your case. 1, 2, 3, kanim. 1, 2, 3, kanim, right? So I was like, well, maybe not. Maybe what it means is a gurita dakani. It's talking about like a hedge. So a hedge has got like on the bottom, it's really thick. And then you've got the pieces sticking up, but at least the bottom part is a real mechitza. So even they're joined at the bottom. So maybe that already is enough that it looks like a real diuma. But if they're not even joined, they're just poles that you stuck in. It's not like a living hedge of bamboo or something. Maybe not. How could it mean that, asked the Gemara? If it means a hedge, then isn't that the same case as a tree? I mean, you talked about a tree. So then what do you think it means? Do you think it means kone pachot mishlosha? So that's a fence. I mean, you could say the same thing. Then Hainu got there. I mean, that's not the point. The point is we're talking about variations on a theme. There's a standard gader, and then there's a gader that's just made out of poles. There's a standard tree, and then there's a tree that's made out of a hedge. Okay, so it means hainu gader, yozelamayit lachlamemar, trey gavni gader. We're talking about different types of fences. So the same thing is true. We'd be talking about different types of trees. I don't know which one it is. And there's another way that we say over a biased question, where he started with the hedge, and he asks Rabbah, can you use a gudrita dekane that isn't shaped bichlal like a diumdin? So just like a thick hedge, would that be kosher or not? To which Rabbah answered, yes, it says, Yasham gader, o ilan, o chitzata kanim. Now, it's nina mishum diyum, but I'm assuming that a chitzata kanim means a gudrita dekane, right? And in this version, he said just the opposite. No, maybe kone pochos bishlosha, shaped like a diumid, is better than a gudrita, than a hedge. Yes, the Gemara said, if that would be the case, it would be a gader. So, and if it's what you're saying, it's a hedge, so then it's a tree. Elamait lach lemeimar, you're going to say the same thing. You're going to tell me, well, we're talking about different types of trees. Okay, so I'm saying different types of gederim. All right, so meanwhile, we got to the fourth question. We have to get to the fifth question and the sixth question, Bezrat Hashem, on Mitzvah Shabbos.